it's time for Homegrown on 94.7 WPBC LP Charlottesville with your hosts Clinton Johnston and Leslie M. Scott Jones, Charlottesville's only radio show devoted to local arts. And now, here's Leslie.
Good morning, everyone, and a lovely Sunday morning to you. It's a little hectic in the studio this morning. It's been a little crazy this morning.
A little different. We're riding with it.
Yeah, you know.
We're rolling with the punches.
We're going to make it work.
We're punches with the rolling. We're punching my old friend Bill Rowland. We're not punching my old friend Bill Rowland.
No, don't do that.
Bill was a tough guy.
He
could take it.
Oh, okay, and that's all it takes. As long as they can take it, you can hit them.
Yeah, exactly. Have you been around guys? I think that's one of the unwritten rules that you learn in masculinity very early on.
Oh, really? See,
if they can take it, you can hit them, and if you think they can take it, you can hit them. And actually, if you just kind of want them to take it, you can hit them.
Wow. Okay. Well, I guess I just try to be nicer to the guys that I know.
Oh, what kind of feminine world do you live in?
Well, you know,
nice to people.
I try to, you know, be more affectionate. Let's put it that way.
That's a great thing.
Thank
All right. We should start our show messing with the mic stand to see if we can get it to stand up.
I'll just hold it for the whole show.
We'll just trade off between the two of us. We should just do that. Just start a show with our parental advisory. We advise all parentals out there that at some point in the show we may, and we'll try not to. We've already kind of done it. We may say the word affectionate, and that's a dangerous thing. That word. So if you have young, innocent, brave new worlds bopping around your kitchen as you listen to this, you might want to shove them away so you don't have to describe to them, explain to them the ins and outs, the difficulties, the ups, the downs, the sheer soulful defenestrations that could come from a close and intimate personal engagement with the word affectionate.
Wow, that you used a lot of words in the advisory this morning. That's okay.
Just making time.
It was all right. I never knew affectionate was that complicated, but
oh, what kind of world do you live in?
Apparently I'm naive today. I don't know. I'm not sure what happened.
All right, let's move on to our first guest. But before we touch our first guest, a little bit of a history lesson. Just a teeny bit. You don't have to switch. No, don't turn away. Just
come
a little
back.
Bit of one.
Come back.
It's just a little bit of one. Just a little context. 1947 in Edinburgh, Scotland. At the Edinburgh International Festival, a festival of high-powered art, 8 groups showed up unrequested, unannounced, and decided that they were just going to do their own performances there. They were not, as I said, they were not part of the original of the official Edinburgh International Festival, but they remained and they performed nonetheless with a goal of enriching the European artistic life after World War II. That turned into a tradition. The tradition has continued, and now the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, working off those original people who did it on the fringes of the International Festival. The Edinburgh Fringe Festival takes place 3 weeks every August in Edinburgh, Scotland. Last year, 3,314 shows went on in 313 venues, artists from all over the world. It is the largest arts festival on the planet.
Yes, it is.
And we've got some people who want to go there. From the Performance Exchange Project, Sean Richards, Karen McLean-Burke. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning, Clinton.
And how are you guys this morning?
Fantastic.
Hey, great.
So tell us a little bit about the show you want to take.
The show is called The Convolution of Pip and Twig.
And it is a two-person show basically about twins. And then about halfway through, one twin sort of leaves on a big, brave, bold adventure.
Get closer to that mic.
Get a little closer. How about this?
There you go.
So the show is The Convolution of Pip and Twig, and it's about twins. And one twin eventually leaves on sort of a big adventure, and it's, it's about love and following your heart and all of those gross human things.
And this is a and this is a show that you guys have been working on for a while. How long have you been working on it?
Yes, 3 years or so. It's a play we developed over the last few years, and we performed it last year first in the Round Room in the Mickey Building, and then at Live Arts. And so it's something we, Sean and I, really wanted to work together on a piece that we developed from scratch. We work with a collective called PEP, Performers Exchange Project, but she and I particularly wanted to develop something that was initiated by us. And so this is how we got, that's how we got started.
So tell a little bit about the Performers Exchange Project for our listeners who don't know what PEP is.
PEP was founded in 2005, and it started initially sort of at the instigation of Martha Mendenhall, because a theater company that she'd gone and done some training with, or some people who she'd gone and done some training with, were bringing a theater company to the U.S. The Daw Theater, Yadranka Angelic Project, was coming to the U.S. They were going to be performing at La Mama, but were looking for other residencies and for help with their visa, and so we sort of formed and decided, yes, we would like to bring them here and to have them do a residency here in Charlottesville, and we'll help them with their visa and all of that. So we formed around that in 2005. And then the following year, PEP, among other local arts organizations, did the Wunderkammer, which was the big arts carnival, which I think originally kind of was a little idea Martha had had, and I think it was based on actually going to the Fringe and seeing the... remind me the name of the
Spiegel Tent.
The Spiegel Tent, yeah. And her and Zap did a lot of talking in a tiny closet at work together about ideas, and Zap loved it and wanted to do it and you know, sort of spearheaded that, and Martha wanted to work on that. So then she came to PEP and asked if people would be involved, and eventually almost all of PEP sort of jumped on board. And then the following year, there was another arts carnival. Jennifer did, as the artistic director, PEP again, co-produced that with a lot of the same people, and was sort of loosely based on the Wunderkammer from the year before, and that one was called Shentai. And so for each of those, there's been original works that we've made, little anchoring play pieces in both of those, and then we also did a full evening-length play called Our American Ancestors, which was part of Live Arts' season in 2009, and then this is the next PEP production, The Convolution of Pip and Twig.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool, cool. How many members of PEP total? Is it
five members. Jennifer Tidwell, Jennifer Hoyt Tidwell, Sean and myself, Martha Mendenhall, and Doreen Bechtel, who lives in Stanton and teaches at Mary Baldwin.
Cool. Cool. So, what for the Convolution of Pip and Twig? What was the genesis? What was the nut that you guys wanted to crack to start this? Was it an idea? Was it an image?
It was
because Pep does a different take on theater, at least a different approach to building theater than a lot of other theater companies, right?
Yeah, I mean, the shows are original, and I guess the first thing to say is that technically I don't know that we would say that PEP has a way we make theater, because as it's a collective, there's sort of, we try to make sure there's room for people to flow in and out of different roles, so at any given moment there's the potential that some person who's never directed before or who's never instigated something or whatever might step up, and so then...
Yeah, it seems pretty fluid.
The process might be different. So far, other than this show, everything, I think, has been directed by Martha, and so there's a lot of... there's a lot of how things have gotten made that have sort of you know, they've been led by her as a director, and the training and the work that we've done has been mostly the stuff that Martha and I learned when we were in a theater company together in D.C. But, you know, there are other people in the company, and if they were to direct something, it might not look exactly the same as it has so far. So that being said, things kind of start from a theme, or it's been different. Ancestors really started from a lot, the transcendental movement in the U.S., and so eventually together as a group we got to the show that came out of that, and other things have started more from either rough or more fully formed scripts that someone had written, and then we make a show out of them. The convolution of Pip and Twig started mostly from the impulse of Kara and I to make something. We had never really initiated or led and been fully in charge of a project. And that was something that was really important to both of us to actually do. And conveniently, we were also the only two PEP members available. Jennifer was living in another state, and Martha always lives in another state. And Doreen is currently really, really busy with this MFA program at Mary Baldwin, which is sort of on the new side. So it was a great moment to kind of push ourselves to start something. So probably the strongest impulse it came from was just to make a thing. So it was really, and I think for me, useful, because I think we like to think or are often told that artistic work comes from a lightning strike or a stroke of genius or a sort of fevered in the middle of the night dream about something you have to make. But I think it's more true that it comes from hard work, even if you have that experience of having something that seems super important to you. And so this was definitely highlighted that. There were some thematic stuff. I was really interested in twins and some of the darker stuff that goes with that, like vanishing twins and twins in mythology and things like that. Sort of an insistent, like the image of a woman on a tiny little boat in a really, really big ocean. But that's pretty broad, and that was basically what I brought. And Kara, I guess I should let you
say that. And conveniently, Sean and I look similar in some ways, and so we kind of went with that twin idea and pushed that. And also, I grew up with musical theater. I love song and dance shows, variety shows, classic musicals. And so I really had a desire to somehow have that be a part of the show. And so it is. We learned how to tap dance. Very badly, but it's in there. And so my character came out of being somebody who's maybe a frustrated Broadway star that's never made it.
Well, you tap dance better than I do. So when you guys do it, it just looks like magic to me. I'm like, ooh, trick.
Well, and that's this sort of mushing, like having these two things and having this moment of like, well, I'm not really sure what that makes. And, you know, Martha in that moment saying, well, I think you just mush them together. That would probably be, up until this moment, like one of the biggest things about the way we have made work, which is that it's always more interesting to come from the side, or to insist that things that don't seem to go together, or that a certain way a person might move and walk needs to fulfill this character you have in your mind that seems completely opposite. You almost always get stuff that's just seems fuller and more interesting and more dynamic if you do that than if you kind of go straight at stuff.
Because of that, do you think it's fair to say that PEP is more process focused in terms of the work that they do?
Yeah. I mean, it took us 2 years to make this, so I would say we are more process focused. Yeah. We are not it's not your sort of regional theater product oriented,
right? It's
season
not, it's,
full of shows kind
it's not
of
like,
thing.
Hey, we got the rights for Guys and Dolls. We're putting it up in 3 weeks.
Exactly. It's not like there's anything wrong with that.
No. Maybe we'll tag into some of that after this, you know. Sign us up for the 7-week rehearsal process after this. No, not really. Actually, I don't think that would work for me. But yeah, I think you can say that we're more process oriented. Takes a while.
So how do you feel? So how do you feel? How do you feel about where the show's at now?
Well,
because it continue. I mean, my impression is from talking to you guys before. Spoiler alert to people: I know both of these people, and we've talked before. Sorry.
And I've worked with Clinton in my old theater company, Foolery. Clinton and I were in a production of The Winter's Tale at Live Arts many years ago.
Many, many years ago. Don't worry, neither of us are affectionate. But yeah, you're talking to you before, it seems like another difference is that you guys are less focused on, oh, hey, we've hit it. Like, this is the mark, and now it's done, and that's that. You're always looking to, I mean, everyone is always looking to how pieces continue and pieces grow across artistic genres. But I feel like in terms of theater and the type of theater that you guys do and the way you guys do it, it's much more present. Is that correct to say?
Yeah, well, it isn't ever done, that's for sure. Yeah. I mean, I think that's fair to say. I guess it's hard to know. I mean, if theoretically we keep performing this show, I don't know if that, you know, once we come back from the Fringe, we may never want to think about the show again. But the idea of having a show that we could keep going back to, that could sort of live for a while as part of a repertoire of stuff we could perform, has always been really appealing to me. So that's something that could happen. And I think if you're going to do that, you have to find ways to keep working on it, right? Or you just kind of want to shoot yourself because it's so tedious, and probably the audience will start to feel the same way because you're just kind of clocking in and doing something. So I think even if it's subtle, you have to find a way to keep working on it. Maybe especially once you're really used to it, because it's so easy to just kind of check in and check out.
Hey, this is Keith Morris, Keith Morris and the Crooked Numbers, and you're listening to 94.7 Homegrown Radio.
All right, 17 minutes past the hour. If you're just joining us, welcome. This is Homegrown, a show about local art, and we're sitting here with Sean Richards and Kara McLean Burke from the Performers Exchange Project, talking about their current show, The Convolution of Pip and Twig. Stay tuned after this, because of course, it's the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call with your man Sean McCord. Today, he is meeting with UVA Vice Provost of the Arts and Director of the Virginia Film Festival, Jody Kilbasa. You know, I tried to say that name without pausing, but Kilbasa, that's the name. What can I do? That's the name. Anyway, and now, if she's listening, she's probably greatly offended. Sorry, I say it.
He's a gentleman.
I am gentle in my offense.
No. Jody Kilbasa is a gentleman.
Oh, my goodness.
So you've really done it now.
Excellent. So, speaking of Edinburgh, why?
Yes.
Why the Fringe Festival? Why Edinburgh? Why are you taking all the effort to ship this thing across an ocean?
Oh, God.
and show it to Europeans who have never seen it before?
Well, I think originally it was because Matt Jocelyn, who is the executive director at Live Arts, where we did perform the show, saw the show and said, "Hey, so when are we taking that show to the Fringe?" And that was sort of the first moment of going like, oh, okay, well, someone else said it and it wasn't us, so it might not be crazy, and maybe it isn't a horrible show, and maybe there are humans that might want to watch it. So and I think there are a lot of other reasons. I think I have never performed at the Fringe. Kara has, with Foolery in the past. So probably she should answer it, because what do I know about performing at the Fringe? But it's certainly, it's an opportunity to push yourself and to, you know, really try to make the best show you can, maybe more so for us than it might be for somebody who's 19 and, you know, going to go and sort of perform for 1 week and sleep on someone's couch and, you know, just kind of soak up the scene or whatever. But for us, it's a significant, you know, investment in time and money and all of that. And so it's a great chance to take your work and to insist, and hopefully successfully insist, that it can stand up to an arts festival where there's 3,000 shows performing. Yeah, and to really just go for it, you know? Push yourself.
Kara, yeah, thoughts on the Fringe?
Yes, I have performed there, and it's an incredible place where the city is taken over by art, and it supports artists in incredible ways. And what
it must be quite an experience, because it seems like it's got to be just an explosion of art.
Absolutely, all sorts. I mean, it's everything. You see so much, and having performed there, and initially I was hesitant, but then in talking about it and feeling like this was a piece that we had worked on for so long, and it was at a good place to then take it to the next level, because I knew that if we were going to go, we would have to make the play even better, even go deeper with it, bring in Martha, who's our director, but bring her in more for more intensive rehearsal, and work on it more and make it more refined and make it more tighter and better. And that really energized us, the thought of that and the planning to do that.
So that's the artistic side of going. But what about the business side of going? Getting the money, getting travel arrangements, you know, figuring out, I mean, how long is your run, all that
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, it's a big commitment. It's a 3-week run, not including some previews as well. And so we're going to be over there the entire month. So it is a big commitment financially, and our time and our personal time, and it affects our families. It affects our work and other work as well. But we felt like we could do it. We could make it work. We have the support of sponsorships and angel donors to get us started in it and get us up to where we thought, okay, we can make this happen and actually get over there. And we are continuing to fundraise. We have an Indiegogo campaign that only has about 10 days left, where we are trying to raise the remaining $10,000 that we need to make the show really successful. And we that includes promotion and all the things that help make it. It's very hard. It's very competitive. You have to compete for audiences because there's so much
right.
other things going on. And so it takes, you have to hustle. You have to work hard at making your show known and making people want to see it, getting reviewers in so that then people can read about it. And then people, you know, the work, it gets noticed. And so
where can people get to the Indiegogo campaign to
yes.
donate?
Well, I imagine you could just go to Indiegogo and search The Convolution of Pip and Twig. You can also go to www.pipandtwig.com, and there will be a button there to go to the Indiegogo. You can find us on Facebook under Pep, and also The Convolution of Pip and Twig. And there will be information in both of those places. We have, yeah, as Kara said, we have about 9 days left, I think, and we still have about $8,000 to raise. So if you've got, some spare change in your cup holder that you would like to throw in,
right,
we would
the
very
bottom
much
of my
appreciate
purse.
It. Yeah. We're going to be shaking both Clinton and Leslie for all of their money on our way out of the theater today.
So when did you decide to do Indiegogo to get the rest of the money? Like, where in the process? Like, you had angel donors that said yes, that made you say, okay, yes, we can make this happen now. How do we get the rest of it? How did you settle on Indiegogo? Was there something about their site that just fit with what you were doing? Because I know there are a lot of crowdsourcing sites.
Mm-hmm. They're relatively close. I think we just decided for this one. We did fund a show previously with a crowdfunding. Ancestors had one as well, and we used Kickstarter, which has the all or nothing.
Yeah.
Option, and we decided for this particular show not to do that, although there are, you could say, sometimes advantages. People can sometimes feel more motivated to help you if they see that you might not get anything. But we just decided that we would just do Indiegogo for this one. It seemed reasonable. And then why crowdfunding? I think from the beginning it was part of the fundraising plan. I mean, you just kind of look at your options, broadly speaking, to make artistic work. There's grants, but there's not a lot of them, less and less every year. So
and they've become harder and harder to get.
Yeah, and they're harder and harder to get. And this isn't a great match. This project in particular isn't a great match for grants.
Right.
But you do kind of want to mix, or at least I guess I feel like you do. There's we've gotten some really great support, and that makes us feel pretty excited and proud, but you also kind of want a mix of support. So there's one said that you let all of the people who love and support you have a chance to contribute and send you on your way and be a part of sending a product, artistic product made in Charlottesville, Virginia, to the international artistic stage.
Which, you know, how cool is that?
Yeah, it's super cool. And, you know, you just, I think, want to feel like you've got, there's different, you get different things from different kinds of support, and there's something to be said from knowing that you've got a large number of individuals across a broad spectrum that were willing to throw their support behind you. And those levels might be different, but it's, I think, good to know that you have that support.
Okay, so you've performed Convolution of Pip and Twig in town. You've also performed it recently in Richmond at the Dogtown Dance Studio. Are there any other opportunities for people who missed those performances to catch it before it heads off to Edinburgh, assuming that it will?
Yes, there will be. We've just recently found a space, which is another thing that's hard to come by, increasingly in Charlottesville, a place to do your work. But we did just recently get a space, and this weekend we'll be sort of figuring out the details of exactly how many seats we have and what we're selling. But I think the most likely, there will be a show, and it will be at the end of July, sort of right before we leave for the Fringe, right after we've done our sort of intense tech week before, with all of the changes we're making to the set and the technical elements to take it across the
ocean. To make it mobile, right?
To make it crazy mobile. Oh, God, that's overwhelming. Let's not think about that. But we'll have that week, and so we'll cap that week with a show here in Charlottesville, a send-off show. And it's most likely that we'll just sell it, add it to the Indiegogo and sell it that way, is what we think is probably going to happen. Just it's the most streamlined option. But yes, there should be a chance to see the show here.
Stay tuned.
Yeah. Great. Well, make sure you tell us about it.
We will. Stay tuned. There'll be information coming about all the details.
And it's going to be at Piedmont, PVCC.
Oh, really?
In their space, yeah.
Oh, hey, that's good for you, PVCC.
Yes.
Well done. Well done. I don't know why they get the German accent for the world.
Yeah, they've got awesome spaces over there. Just saying.
Indeed. Indeed. Thank you guys so much for coming on our show. Please remind people where they can find your Indiegogo campaign.
You can go to www.pipandtwig.com and find information there, or you could go straight to Indiegogo and search the Convolution of Pip and Twig. Thank you, Clinton and
Thank
Leslie.
Thank you so much for having us.
Sean Richards, Cameron Kleinberg, the Performance Exchange Project, here on Homegrown. Now you know. Okay, let's look at some other art that's coming up in this artistic town of ours. This is the last day for Ghost the Musical over in Stanton, based on the popular film. Tickets and information, shannonarts.org. This is also the last day for Creatures at City Clay. Go to City Clay, make your own creatures. They can be real or imaginary. Go to cityclayseville.com for information. Currently running right now, Annie Temmick Hat Shapes at Annie Temmick's Hat Shapes at WVTF and Radio IQ Studio Gallery of the New City Arts Initiative. Hats and drawings by Annie Temmick. Gallery hours by appointment. Also currently running until May 27th. Flower Till Death Do We Part, prints and paintings by local artist Hannah Barefoot at the Welcome Gallery of the New City Arts Initiative. Raptors is running right now until May 29th. Paintings by Cynthia Burke at McGuffey Art Center. And until May 22nd, you've got a chance to see the Great American Trailer Park Musical at Four County Players. Go up there, see that. Currently running also till May 25th. It is open submission by writers and directors for this year's Guerrilla Theater's Summer Shorts. So check that out. Today, reinterpreting the Pollux Branch Watershed Exhibition and Movement Workshop, an interdisciplinary mapping project undertaken by UVA Drama Department and the UVA School of Architecture at the Ix Art Park. What is that? Why don't you go down there and find out? Tomorrow, starting tomorrow and running all through the summer, Art and Country at the Klugiroo Aboriginal Art Collection. Art and Country is a diverse selection of works on canvas, paper, and even eucalyptus bark drawn from the Klugiroo collection, looking at how these Aboriginal artists figure their relationship with their homelands. Also today is the last of the Chicken Bank Collective's offerings for us for their Chrysalis installation. Lighthouse Studio and Chicken Bank Collective will hold a dance for film lab from 3 to 5 p.m. at Lighthouse Studio's teaching studio in the loft in the glass building. And tonight, you get a chance to see the screening of the feature-length dance film for piece Secondary Succession, done by the Chicken Bank Collective. May 19th, Big Blue Door Improv at Seville Coffee. May 20th to June 11th, Dream Girls at Live Arts. May 21st, May Moon Masquerade at the Ix Art Park. And May 24th, the Virginia Film Festival and Violet Crown present VFF at the Violet Crown Film Series, the first of this film series. The first show is going to be In the Shadow of Women at 7:30. French filmmaker Philippe Garrel gives a close look at the complex nature of infidelity and specifically the unique ways in which it's experienced and processed by men and women. And to look at some of the musical stuff that's offered to us this week today, Jazz Brunch at Fellini's at noon. Also, the Virginia Folklife Apprentice Showcase at Ashland Highland, free at noon. Tin Can Alley, a cloud-themed carnival and mini rock festival, 4 p.m. at the Ix Art Park. And tonight, Mother Shillelagh at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. Tomorrow, this is an important one, Friends of Jason, a benefit. Jason Burke, our man, he was a former guest here, man behind the Six-Pack Singer-Songwriter Showcase. Great guy. Has incurred some medical bills, and as with most of us artists, does not have a lot of resources to deal with those. So the regular local singer-songwriter night is going to become a benefit for Jason. Go check it out tomorrow, 7 to 11 p.m. at the local. Good cause for a good guy. May 20th, UVA's Aaron and Wildfire split the Fridays After Five stage with Love Me Do, which is Peter Marcouche and Rob Bridgman doing a funky take on the Beatles catalog. Also Perfect Slight, local rockers at the Wild Wing Cafe, and Red and the Romantics at Pro Renata Farm Brewery. DJ Tulo at Tavern on the James, Crow Jane at Bebebadero, DJ Groove Matic at Rapture on May 21st. With Little Walter and the Convictions at Heritage on the Main on the same night, and also the Pollux at the Bebedero. Rounding out on May 21st, it's Eli Cook at Rapunzel's Coffee and Books. And every Tuesday, it's the traditional Irish session at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. Every Wednesday, the open mic night at the Pro Renata Farm Brewery, Bob Bonetta at Cafe Couture, and the Mike Rosensky and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's. And of course, it wouldn't be Wednesday without Jim Wave at the Blue Moon Diner. Every Thursday, Woolen Writers Revival, hosted by Will Thomas Reed and Brian Craddock at Firefly, or you could just skip over down to the mall and head over to Miller's to catch the John Dearth Quintet, because every once in a while, you just gots to come down to Dearth, and that is just some of the wonderful artistic options available to us in our wonderful artistic town. If you are an artist and have an event you'd like us to talk about, we'd like to talk about it. Contact us on our Facebook page, homegrown/homegrown WPVC, or you can email us at homegrown947@gmail.com.
Hi, this is Jason Burke of the Six Pack Songwriter Series. You're listening to 94.7 FM, Homegrown.
Boom, 34 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Homegrown, a show about local art. Stay tuned afterwards. It's the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call with your man, Sean McCord. He's going to be talking with Jody Kilbasa, UVA Vice President of the Arts and Director of the Virginia Film Festival. But before you get to that, oh my, you've got to go through our second guest, and you're going to be so glad we made you do it. Joining us here, local singer-songwriter David Tewksbury.
Hey, Clinton. Hey, Leslie. Thanks for having me in.
Of course. We are so excited to have you here. So I guess, like everyone else that comes on the show, you have something coming up that you would like to talk to us about.
I do have something coming up. This coming Friday night at the Ix Art Park Gallery, I'm releasing my first full-length CD. You have a copy of it in your hands.
Yay, I'm so excited.
You're like one of six people in the whole city of Charlottesville right now, because the disc is not officially released until Friday. It may become digitally available on Wednesday. We'll see.
Oh, my God. We're exclusive, Clinton.
You're very exclusive.
We are select.
So that's going to be Friday night at the Ix Art Park Gallery. Indoors, right by the big fiberglass butt. Just go through the doors, left of the butt into the gallery. And we're going to have Jason Burke, Susan Munson, and Bill Staton as the opening act. They go on at 9 o'clock. So what we're trying to do is let Aaron and the Wildfire and Love Me Do have their big party at the pavilion with UVA graduation weekend, and then kind of funnel some of the folks who maybe have gotten a little too crowded,
yes,
anywhere from the corner all the way down to Belmont, to slide on over to Ix and get ready for what should be a really fun party.
Yeah, sounds like it.
I'm playing with a full band, my friends Eric and Chris and Drew Pompano, and then we're going to have special guest Butch Taylor, who plays with John Dearth most Thursday nights at Miller's.
Yeah.
Sitting in, he produced the record, and he'll be playing keys with us, as well as his son Jake, who did some guitar parts. So it's going to be
really awesome. That is a packed show of some really talented artists that are in this town.
It's a privilege.
Yeah.
For sure.
So tell us a little bit about the album. Like, why? What was your impetus for this group of songs?
Well, the real impetus is that I've been wanting to do this as a songwriter, put together a full length record for more than 10 years. The thing is that in that more than 10 years, I've had multiple career changes. We're raising a family. We're working on houses. Life just has been going on. So
there hasn't
been a lot of time, money, or opportunity to go this direction. So fortunately, the time happened. Butch's availability was there. Really wanted to work with him. He produced Jason Burke's record last year. He's producing Michael Coleman's record right now.
Yeah.
And Lester Seals right now, as far as I know, at Ravensworth Studios in Scottsville. And it was just perfect timing. And then the Kickstarter was successful. It happened very quickly. And we raised more than our goal. So
that's awesome. Okay, so you decided you had the time. You decided you're going to do Kickstarter. How? Because Clinton and I talk to artists about this all the time. You know, we're great at creating art, not so great at the business side of it sometimes, because we just don't think like that. So how did you do the Kickstarter campaign? So how did you market it so that you reached more than your goal?
Well, I think a big piece of it was just having a pretty deep network of friendships and relationships. Just having been in the music scene kind of on and off about 18 years.
Right.
So built a lot of connections with folks who got to hear me. But I think it was also the incentives, you know. They say in the promo that you're supposed to, in order to connect with people, that they want some sort of an experience.
Right.
So my wife and I, for several thousand dollars about 5 years ago, bought a sailboat, and we learned to sail. And we now, every opportunity we can, we go out on the Chesapeake Bay and we sail.
Right.
With our kids. And so I thought, well, that's something probably a lot of other musicians aren't going to be able to say.
That's awesome.
So one of the incentives was go sailing with the songwriter and have an on-boat concert.
That's awesome.
Damn.
So we're doing that. I got two of those, which is pretty hefty donation. And then this item I'm holding right here, I'm going to be a little sorry to give up. Pam, if you're listening, this guitar is yours, and you're getting it on Friday. I'll hand it right to you with a hug.
Somebody won the guitar that you used on the album?
Yeah, so this is the...
Oh, my God!
Somebody won a really nice-looking Fender 6-string guitar?
Yes! Yeah. It's beautiful.
It's like a boutique. They lost their shirts on this concept, but they were trying to do sort of handcrafted instruments for a couple of years, and this is one of them. So,
and it's gorgeous.
And it plays beautifully, too. So that was the high-ticket item, and it went very quickly.
Wow.
One really interesting thing, you talk about connections. So as a father of children and a guy who's been working and trying just to be that stability and helping my wife get through grad school.
Yeah.
I got somebody reached out to me from Whole Foods and said, hey, we're doing this beer and cheese pairing on Friday. Would you come down and play a few songs in the cafe? And I'm like, sure. I mean, for $75 of groceries? Yeah, I'll do that.
There you go.
And I did that actually a few times. But one of the times that I was doing it, a woman stopped and really started listening. And then she sat down and she listened the whole time. And then she bought 5 of my previous recording.
Wow.
And shared that with all of her friends. That woman is the woman who is receiving this
the guitar.
So
Oh, wow.
That connection was like 3 years ago. And, you know, sort of at through Facebook, long distance kind of relationship, that moment that happened.
Yeah.
You know, so, and she's been an incredible, what do you call that? Proselytizer. Somebody who's just said, you got to hear this.
An
guy.
Advocate. She's there. Been an advocate
yes.
for you. Awesome.
So
we all need those.
So connections, experiences, those sort of things, I think really made the difference with this.
That's awesome. So, so what's the theme of this album? Does it have like an overarching theme for the songs, or
I don't know if it has an overarching theme, because really the songs on it are what I would consider my best unrecorded material over the last 15 years.
Wow.
There are general themes that run through my music, which have to do with the pain of life, the beauty of life,
which sometimes can be the same thing.
Yes. I mean, they often are wed to one another.
Yes.
So, but I think, and I'm never intentional about this. I'm never like trying to come from anywhere with a particular angle, but,
right.
You know, to me, I think there's an element of healing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, look, I'm looking at pain. I'm dealing with my own. I'm looking at the world's, and somehow, whether it's in the singing or in the living or the believing or the breathing, it's hopeful. And
yeah.
And that is beyond me.
So you're holding that beautiful guitar.
Mm-hmm.
How about you play a little something for us?
Sure. How much of a little something do you want me to play?
Clinton says do a whole song.
Okay.
Here you go.
My hope is that this comes out pretty clean through the one microphone.
Oh, I'm sure it will.
Song has ballads and it has grooves, and this would be a groove. All right. This one is called Take and Leave of My Senses. I've been missing in action. I've been feeling a fraction of what I'm meant to be. I'm coming up from the tunnel, lights pouring into the funnel of my misery. See, I've been crawling down the street, children clinging to my feet. Never got the soon on the rise. You forgot the words after all these years. Throwing my arms around the world, I left behind my precious pearl. Was it for this that I've been crucified? I'm taking leave of my senses. I can't believe this touch and feel. I'm taking leave of my senses to get to what is really real. Shook by the light and the thunder, I've had reason to wonder what is going on. Well, I was stuck on the surface, feeling no sense of purpose here in Babylon. Oh, I saw you calling in the street, children clinging to your feet as you cast away the vapors and the lies. Throwing your arms around the world, you left behind your precious pearl. Was it for this they had you crucified?
I'm sick and leave of my senses. Can't believe this touch and feel. I'm sick and leave of my senses to get to what is really real. Well, nothing I could do or say could drive this dark of doubt away. Nothing I could think to or do could pierce this deepening blue till you came shining through. You came shining through on me. Yeah. See, I'm taking leave of my senses, dropping over walls, bounding over fences, dropping my guard, all my defenses, taking leave, leave of my senses. I believe I'm taking leave here. Yeah. I believe I'm shaking free here. Yeah. I believe I'm taking leave of my senses, and I am taking leave of my senses. I can't believe this touch and feel, cause that's not real. I'm taking leave of my senses to get to what is really real. See, I am taking leave. I believe that I can see. Oh, I am free. Taking leave of my senses. I am taking leave. I believe that I can see. Oh, I am free. Taking leave of my senses. Whoa. Taking leave.
All right. That is awesome.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, so I, first of all, Pam, I'm jealous that you get that guitar because it sounds amazing.
Pam, I'm jealous too.
Pam?
So I was actually having a conversation the other day with a couple of kids at Albemarle High School, and your name came up because they were like, yeah, I've heard of him. He plays some weird kind of music. Like, it's kind of like new wave kind of soul. I think they call it like Americana. Is that what it is? And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to talk to him next week, so I will ask him.
That is cool. I'm curious how they know who I am, because I have kids at Charlottesville High School.
They know who you are because their teacher, Chance Dickerson, Chance. Knows who you are.
Ah.
Yes. Yeah.
So Chance and Trevor Przeski run this music space over
yeah,
there.
And exactly.
They do a camp in the summertime. They're awesome. It's very cool.
So would you classify your stuff as Americana or?
No, I would not. Only because I think Americana is folk music in the truest sense. It's
okay.
Like, it's like written with folk instruments for the purpose of, like communicating on that earthy level.
Right.
And I'm not a strummer or a picker. My influence is basically the radio of the 70s, 1970s, where, you know, there weren't really these sharp lines between R&B or rock or art rock or
yeah.
jazz. They all just kind of bled into each other.
Yeah.
So I just call it a soulful indie folk. And I think we're adding the word pop now because when you play it with a band,
right, that's what it becomes.
It becomes pop because it's... Most of the songs are fairly concise. They follow pop format in that there's a hook, there's
right.
a melody, there's a pre-chorus, there's a chorus, some kind of an interesting bridge. And then you
yeah.
try to get the whole business done, you know, in the ideal world, 3.5 minutes. But
right.
in my world, most of the time, 4.5. And then occasionally 5 if the song just has a lot to say.
Yeah.
So... soulful indie folk is kind of how I described it.
Okay. Well, that's good because that's how I described it to the kids. I was like, I don't
cool.
think that's what he calls it, but I'll ask him.
You got to give a name to it, but...
Yeah. And what is that about that you have to give a name to it? Like, I mean...
Oh, humans like categories.
They really do. And it's... And to put something like music in a box just seems so counterintuitive to me. And... I don't, so I'm always struggling with, oh, well, that's rap. Oh, that's hip hop. Oh, that's classical. And it's like, mm-hmm. so what? It's good. What does mm-hmm. it matter? Why does it matter what name you put to it? Like,
yeah, I don't know. People like categories, you know.
So tell us again when you are performing, when your CD release is, because I'm all those people, I definitely want to make sure everybody knows where and when so they can show up.
So this coming Friday at 9 p.m., we'll open the doors at 8 p.m., and what we're trying to do is kind of segue off of the Fridays after 5, you know, so Fridays wraps at 8:30 downtown, and what we're hoping is that folks will just kind of gravitate from the Pavilion downtown mall area, you know, walk on over through the Warehouse District and over to the Ix property and come join us at 9.
No need to go home on Friday.
Don't go home.
Keep artist hours on Friday night. You keep an artist hours on Friday night.
I think we'll be able to let folks go by 10:30 if they would wish, you know, maybe 11 o'clock. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But it should be a fantastic night. We've got some great...
Take him to the after party.
That's right.
So
yes.
So this coming Friday, May 20th, at the Ix Art Park, but inside in their gallery space, just to the left of the big fiberglass butt, it's $5 at the door, and this is a benefit for one of the other radio stations in town who got behind us, and Market Central that works with... the city market, to sustain the city market, to sustain local artisans. And then one really cool piece of what they do is that they allow folks to use their SNAP debit and coupons for tokens at the city market. So folks who are of limited financial means can still get organic food
wow.
and
that's,
produce.
That's
a very
really
cool thing.
Great. Yeah, because
food deserts, people in poverty, you know, you mm-hmm. have a little bit of change, or you've got your coupons or your card, and you're going to buy the least expensive food you can, and
exactly.
it's usually not very
healthy
for you. So
yes.
I love that mission that Market Central has.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, and we're also going to have, we have got Brazos Tacos having some stuff with us. Gypsy Juice is going to be there. They do a lot of festivals, juices and teas. And then Virginia Distillery is also one of our sponsors.
That's awesome. Well, it sounds like a great time, and I hope everybody comes out to support you. Because
I would like 200 somebodies to come on down.
All right.
We got expenses, people. I got to pay people.
All right. Well, let's hope that you exceed that goal as
Thanks.
Well.
Thank you.
Because this is for a really great cause and, you know, a chance to listen to some really great music.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming in, David.
Thank you, Leslie. Thank you, Clinton.
Woo!
All right, so we're going to listen to just a little bit of a song, the second track from the album.
Well, go for it. Way Home.
To hide, someday I'll come to. God knows I've tried, nobody to claim me. I'm on my own, but can you blame me? If I can find my way back. Not much I haven't tried, just stained, bruised and bloody. Seeking arms held open wide, nowhere to claim me. I'm on my own, but can you blame me? If I can't find my way back, oh, oh, when I'm all alone. Well, I can't find my way back. Of somebody's loving arms.
track off of David Tewksbury's new CD. Make sure you go to that CD release party on Friday. It's going to be a rip-roaring good time. All right. Well, it's almost the end of the show, and you guys know what that means. Well, the world is coming to an end, folks. This is it. Fred Sanford is finally going to see Elizabeth. REM's prediction has come true. It's the end of the world as we know it. And I don't feel as fine as Michael Stipe did about it. In fact, I continue to be appalled, utterly flabbergasted by people. I should explain. I went to the symphony last night with my daughter. A dear friend of ours is an opera singer, and his choir sings with the symphony on a regular basis. He got us tickets to the performance. This one, like all the others, was being recorded for later broadcast on PBS. Now, before I go on, let me just warn you that I'm going to channel my grandmother's here for a minute. When I was coming up, if you were going to any type of performance, you dressed for it. It was just like when you were going to church. You didn't show up in jeans and a t-shirt. You made sure you looked your best. It was out of respect for what you were about to see. It was your little way of paying homage to the work that the performers had put into it. It was also because if you dared step out of the house without proper attire, somebody was going to look at you and say in very dulcet tones, "Baby, where you think you going?" To which you would reply, "Which you?" The demeanor would quickly change, and a hand would have been thrown on a hip before a very curt, "Not dressed like that, you ain't." That's how we knew. And through years of hearing that, we became accustomed to when we were supposed to dress up and when we could look like a bum. The rule was pretty much, if you step out of the house, you better look presentable. Now, I get that as we became adults, we altered these rules to suit our own lifestyle. I, for instance, don't really like wearing makeup, but if I'm hanging out with my mom for the day, I know that I better have at least some eyeliner and some lipstick on, because she's gonna say, "You need a little something on your lips." So I get to the symphony excited because it had been years since I'd been able to go. And as I walked with my daughter through the throngs of people, I noticed to my dismay that apparently no one dresses for the symphony anymore. No one. We spent the entire evening mercilessly mocking these people who don't know how to show up to an event. And that's just it. The symphony, the ballet, the opera, a wedding, a funeral, your cousin's baby shower are all events. And your dress should reflect your feeling about the event. Now, if you don't really like your cousin, but your mom has forced you to go, then feel free to wear a Metallica t-shirt and some obscene removable tattoos. But if you've paid over $100 for seats to the symphony, then dress like you paid $100 on tickets to the symphony. I'm not joking. My daughter had to restrain me a couple of times from telling people they were not properly attired and they should go home and try again. For future reference, things that should not be worn to a symphony, opera, or ballet performance are the following: jeans, t-shirts, flip-flops, hiking shoes, any type of legging, no matter how dressy you think it looks. Leggings are not pants, people. Tunic shirts, hoodies, furry or zip-up, keds with holes or without, and last but not least, anything see-through. Things that should be worn: dresses, gowns, sport coats and ties, suits, tuxes. I know. You're sitting there saying, why does it matter? They paid, they're supporting art, who cares what they look like, right? Well, following that logic, the next time you go for a job interview, wear the zip-up hoodie and the keds with the rip in the side and see if you get the job. You won't. You know why? Because you weren't presentable. And guess what? Just like a prospective employer thinks how you dress shows a level of respect and commitment, so does dressing to go to a live music or theatrical event. These people have put blood, sweat, and tears into what they are about to do for you. You paid your money. You carved out time in your very busy schedule, so it's obviously important. So how about you also dress as if it's important to you? Take a few minutes. Put on those heels and the dress. Slip on that button-down shirt and the sport coat. Feel special to go see something special. Because when you go to see, when going to see art becomes mundane, that's when people stop going. It should be an event. It should be special. And you should dress to impress. And that's the weekly rant, ladies and gentlemen. We want to give some really big thanks to Cyan Richards and Kara McLean Burke from PEP. Please donate to their Indiegogo campaign. Let's get them to Scotland, the convolution of Pip and Twig. We also want to thank David Tewksbury for coming by and talking to us. His CD release party is on the 20th at the Ix Art Park. Left at the giant butt, apparently. The CD is called Sun is Rising. And as you heard right here, it's some really good music. It's going to be a really great concert. And you guys should come on out and see it. All right. Thank you so much for tuning in today. We love you so much. Thank you so much for listening. And we are out.
Suppose the crows and on my level with the sacred flows. And I face that bold storm.
What? Firm ground down.
Seven seas unfathomable, yet superb sounding. Like consciousness, conscience, character, and concentration. Classiness, cunning, and of course, celebration. Of small joys, not just prominent big ones. It's the fact you made it out your mama, that's a gift, son. The fact the sun rose and we here, I believe it's time. Step away from the grind and feel it shine, peace of mind.
This is a celebration,
so grab a glass and hoist it high.
You've been listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.